Are you ready to supercharge your music career?
You've come to the right place.
This is the Real Musicians Don't Starve podcast, the only show where you will learn firsthand how musicians just like you have turned their passions into highly successful long-term careers. I'm your host, Michael Elsner, and I'm so happy to have you with us today. Now, let's dive into this episode. Hello and welcome to Real Musicians Don't Starve. I'm Michael Elsner, and today I have a very, very, very special guest with us. He has sold over 25 million albums. You hear him on the radio, I would say every day, but I hear him on the radio pretty much every week. It just depends what you're listening to. You hear him when you're sitting at a restaurant, you know, having food with someone. His name's Adam Gaynor, original guitar player and founding member of Matchbox 20. And I'm very honored to call him a great friend. And I've learned a lot from Adam over the years. And you know, 25 million albums later. But thank you for coming and hanging out with us today, Adam. Most people here are going to already be familiar with your catalog of work. So I'm just thrilled that you're here to talk with us today.
Michael, man, first of all, we are dear old friends. It's like you say, oh, this is my friend. We're friends. Like, yeah. I've known you. We've known each other more than a decade, right?
Oh, yeah. About 14 years, 14, 15, 13, 14 years, yeah.
It definitely feels like more than a decade. And I just think our fun full circle, we'll get into it later, but our full circle story of what you're doing, what you've done, what I've done, what I'm doing, it's just perfect, dude. And I'm so proud to be here with all of you guys today. It's great.
Well, the thing that I love so much about your story, by the way, the other day Adam showed me his new bio, and we can get to this a little later on his website. But
on my about page,
it is the best. It is the most entertaining bio I have ever read in my life, and I gotta say that I became very envious because it was so good and so entertaining to read. But, you know, one of the things that I love about Adam and you know, that I think you're going to get so much out of this conversation with Adam is that he is a perfect example of someone who created opportunities for himself. He put himself in the center, very intentionally, put himself in the center of the activity, which ultimately led to him, you know, becoming a founding member of Matchbox 20, and then of course having the tremendous success that they had over all the albums that they've done. But you know, we talk about three things here with Real Musicians Don't Starve. We talk about your skill set, your mindset, and then your purposeful actions. And I'd just love to dive into the action side of your career, because you really were very purposeful in making a decision to work at a recording studio because you knew that it was going to put you in the center of where you needed to be.
Absolutely. I mean, I think the idea, one of the things I preach, right? And we'll talk about, I have this new podcast that we're doing. There's no early plug. We'll get to that later. Mm-hmm. But on the show, the idea is we have actors and musicians and film and TV producers and film and music producers. And the idea that I'm trying to get at is, how did you get your break? Where did you get your start? How did you take that gap of, oh my God, I wish this would happen, to holy crap, I can't believe I did it. And you have this huge crevice. Now in my hand, it's not that big, but in reality, this is everything. This little space is literally the world. So when I was younger, and it's not that young, I had to make a conscious decision. I'm in South Florida, and the only people down there were like J-Lo, Diddy, I think Shaq had just come down there. It's like there wasn't a big music mecca. Even in Orlando, there was at least alternative rock going on. I had to find out how to put myself at the right place at the right time. And I had a friend who was an assistant at Criteria Recording Studio in Miami. Long story ended as I'm like, I got to get in there somehow so that all the people that do come to Florida that record there would be there. And it was the best decision of my life. So I purposefully, as they say, answered phones so that I'd be around Collective Soul and Lenny Kravitz and Julio Iglesias and whoever went there. And it was literally the best decision of my life because I was around the industry's best players and producers.
And you worked there for quite a while as well.
Well, the joke is, it's like, you know, I thought it would be a 2 to 4 year quick, fast pace to fame plan. But I started, I think, when I was 22 years old, which is a kid, but not a kid. And man, I did not get my break. For all of you out there that are like, I'm 26, it's never going to happen. Dude, I was 30 years old when I got my break. I don't think we can go in music history and find anybody that started in a band when he was 30 years old, like MTV, and wound up with the success that I was so fortunate enough to have at starting at 30 years old. That's when you're supposed to kind of calm down and retire. So I feel truly blessed that I made it happen at all.
Well, I mean, that's just a testament to, you know, really being focused and pursuing that goal and you know, sticking with it, you know, again. And so that's the action, you know, but then I'm sure during those 8 years that you were there, there were a lot of, you know, frustrations and, you know, and rejection and stuff like that. What was it that allowed you to continue past, you know, that 8 year mark, or we'll say the 7 year mark, to get to right that eight, when it started happening?
It was 8 years in one day. Now, the thing that I did for myself, it's that I had two mantras, right? I'm kind of like a very spiritual philosophy kind of human. So I created two mantras for myself that I would write in these notebooks. I put them on post-its. And I think one of the very first ones I wrote was this thing that was supposed to energize and inspire me. And it's a little saying I call inner strength, inner peace, focus, and fire. And it's like one of my main core beliefs. Inner strength is to have basically the strength to push forward, make sure the inner peace is to have peace in the decisions you make, right? The focus is you have to be laser focused in the craft or the goal you're trying to get. And the fire is you have to execute yourself. You have to be accountable for yourself. You have to be able to have the fire and the passion to get this done, because no one else will, which leads me to the last mantra that right when I thought I was going to have a nervous breakdown and I was on the phone almost as a 30-year-old man, kind of crying on the phone, my mom saying, am I crazy? Am I really ridiculous to think this is going to happen? And she's like, you know, you don't want to be 50 years old and say that you didn't give yourself the ultimate chance and the ultimate shot. You don't want to wake up one day and go, why did I quit on my dream? And I wrote this thing on my mirror for all the days that I wanted to slack and all the days that I thought maybe I could play Tiger Woods golf or I could do something else. And it was just a little piece of paper that I taped on my mirror that said, you owe it to yourself. And it literally changed my life and the motivation I had every day of waking up, brushing my teeth and going, you owe it to yourself. You owe it to yourself not to sit on the couch all day. You owe it to yourself to turn the TV off. You owe it to yourself to do something positive, to move yourself forward every day. You have to be accountable to yourself because no one else will. No one else is going to hand you anything. No one else is out there going, oh my God, where's Adam? His talents need to be seen in the world. You literally owe it to yourself. And those two mantras, separated by years and years, really helped keep my brain together to saying, dude, just get it done. Figure it out. You owe it to yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it seems like so many of the musicians that I've talked to through the years, that there's a common element to their success, and a lot of it is that they write down goals and they write down sayings and they post them throughout their house, you know, on their mirror when they get up, on the door to their bedroom, you know, wherever. So they are constantly reminding themselves, you know, to not be lazy, you know, to not sit around and watch TV all night long, back to actually, you know, go out and network or work on their craft or whatever it is. And that seems like a very recurring theme, you know, writing something down to always remind yourself that this is what you need to be doing.
Yeah, that's really interesting, because I don't know that a lot of other people did that, but it's super true. You have to be accountable to what you're doing. I think there's so many different methods that I've used, which at another time we'll get into, but I've definitely tried to map out, just like you said, other people do, different eras in my life that I thought I needed to kind of make sure that I kind of took my own course and made sure that I reached different milestones in my life. And that's another whole prophecy statement thing, I call it, where we'll get into that during another time, but it's super in depth. And yeah, it's just being accountable.
So I'm curious to get your perspective of this. You know, I mean, people can look at you and see that, you know, you're the definition of success, especially being a musician, you know, having sold, you know, so many records and having had so many hit songs, you know, that's the goal for so many musicians. And you obviously know a lot of other successful, you know, musicians who not only are well-known musicians, but you know, a lot of the people who are working behind the scenes,
sure.
In all of your experience, having had, you know, all the success you've had on the public side, of course, but then also, you know, the lifestyle that you've had and just the life as a whole of being a musician touring the world and creating records for so many years. What, when you look back on music, and if you could define success, having had all the experience you've had, how do you view success now?
Man, you know, thinking about this, and I think the best definition that I can personally give for success would be, and I'm really proud of this. I was actually thinking about this. Michael and I have known each other for a long time, and I was just like, what can I say about my definition of success? And I think it's security meets happiness, right? Like, success to me isn't putting $1 million in the bank. Success is being able to make a living at something that you love, and you have the security to do that, and you're super happy doing it. So I think success, if you just said security, excuse me, if you just said security plus happiness equals success, I mean, that's it. If you open a floral shop and you're making a living and you're doing what your passion is, that's success. It's not about putting $1 million in the bank. It's paying your bills and being able to be happy in what you're doing in your life. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's awesome. I love that. You had the mindset that you were going to obviously be successful, you know, writing out the phrases that, you know, kept you going and stuff like that. And then obviously you took the action and were very purposeful on getting yourself into the center of a community by, you know, working at Criteria. And of course, obviously you're a very skilled musician. I mean, obviously that goes without saying. So you have the skill set, you know, the mindset and then the actions that got you there. What would you say, you know, combining all those would be the most prominent, how would I phrase this? What would you say would be the most prominent contributor to your success? Like personality, the way you get along with people, networking skills. What would you say about that?
I think I would love to pretend it was my personality, but I'm not sure my other bandmates would agree. I know they love me, I think. And I would say the biggest contributor that I might have had towards my becoming a band member is putting myself, it's the same thing as the first thing, putting myself at the right place at the right time. I absolutely know that wouldn't have happened. I don't know that, but it would have been far more difficult sitting in my apartment all day trying to write music and really not having the resources around me to show or to practice or to record. So I think for me, it was literally just making sure that I did something to propel myself, and I made a conscious decision to go and answer phones in a recording studio. That was that attributed to me being around the right people, got myself seen, got myself heard, and eventually got asked to go meet some other guys that were putting together a band in Orlando. So yeah, I mean, it was making the decision to put myself at the right place at the right time.
That's awesome. You know, one of the things that Adam said to me years ago, I still remember this, and actually I do share this with a lot of people. Adam one time said to me, I actually still remember even where I was when we were on the phone, where I was driving. I remember all these little details of it. But one time Adam said something to me that I've never forgotten. I've shared it with so many musicians. And he said, Mikey, if you want to play with the big boys, you have to play like the big boys. And I've always remembered that phrase because it, you know, that you can apply that to so many different situations.
Sure.
You know, and you know, if you want to get in with if you want to have a music career, and I just look at it as, you know, looking at the music career as a whole, if you want to get in and be a successful musician, if you want to play with the successful musicians,
right,
then the reality is that you have to play like them. You have to learn. I don't mean that skill set wise. I mean that you have to learn the business. You have to have the mindset that's going to get you there. You have to have that you know, attitude determines altitude, you know, perspective of, obviously you can't be the person in the corner being a bum. You know, no one's going to want to be around that. So that phrase has meant so much to me over the years. I think about that all the time. I know it's funny because we were just talking before I started hitting record, and I bet you don't even remember saying that to me. And it's amazing how you can speak little things into people's lives that are so transformational for years and years and years and years and years to come.
It makes me so proud, man. I mean, that's the payback, and what the audience doesn't know as well as we did a little pre-show chat. We always catch up. We've been talking a lot. Because I myself am also taking some of Michael's courses to show you the big full circle that life can be. This is a great learning lesson for your audience, Michael. It's you don't know the people that you're going to impact, and you don't know what's going to become of them. And it's not about, oh my God, 10 years from now, it might be useful to me. That's not how it is. You just take care of people. It's kind of what as I watch Michael's courses, he talks about give. You have to give a lot. You have to give a lot of yourself to other people. And I'm not a big believer in philosophical karma sayings like, if you give, it will come back. I don't know that that's true. But I do know being a good person and giving of yourself is a great thing to do. That's it. If you can do that simply, at some point it may come back. And it turns out in this case, I'm so proud of Michael and his career and what he's accomplished. I know that he also wanted to do touring music and being in a giant band. But right now, he's becoming an internet enthusiastic power mogul. And I'm watching him with just going, oh my God, what is happening? This is like the next Tony Robbins meets music world. And I'm just so impressed by you. So it is just the most wonderful full circle to be able to be doing this with you today, but also thanking you for the things that you're teaching me. It's an amazing moment. I love it.
Oh, thanks, Adam. Oh, you're going to make me cry.
Good. You almost made me cry a couple times, so we're good.
Well, Adam was sharing with me earlier, right before we recorded, about, what were you up, like, you know, past midnight or whatever? And
like 6 a.m, but let's not talk about that. Those are bad habits. Don't your viewers go to bed by 3 or 4, please.
But I guess he was watching one of the videos that I have out, and I had actually shared that statement. That was one of the key points that I was trying to make in that particular lesson. And I was, you know, giving Adam credit, and he goes, I looked at the screen and I saw my name.
I was getting ready to go to bed, and I paused the screen, and I left it on as I was in the kitchen cleaning up. And then all of a sudden I come back to the pause, and I'm like, wait, Matchbox 20, Adam, what? And I had no idea I was making a cameo on his show. And there's and I started reading the letter, and I called my girlfriend. I'm like, this is going to make me cry. Like, come on, Michael. Come on, buddy.
Hey, I wanted to press pause on this podcast for a second and let you know that if any of your goals over the next year include recording and releasing a new album, generating placements of your songs on TV shows, films, and commercials, building a fan base that will sustain your career, or just transitioning into full-time music, I want to invite you to my special workshop, Real Musicians Don't Starve. In this workshop, we're going to focus on the 3 keys to your success, and you're going to learn an extremely powerful strategy that allows you to create your own wow factor. And this allows you to attract opportunities to you and your music, as well as remove any financial worry that you may have pursuing a career as a musician. And you can check out this workshop for free at realmusiciansdontstarve.com/workshop. Now let's jump back into the podcast. You know, earlier in my career, a lot of people know that, you know, I was in a band in LA for a long time and whatnot. And, you know, and that's ultimately how we met. And, you became a big mentor to me for many years through that. And I learned so much from you just about navigating the music industry, you know. It's funny because I look back on that and I go, man, I wish I knew that stuff when I was in my 20s, you know, how important it is to understand the business. you know, and then not only that, but then also to be able to bring value to other people, you know, and serve other people. And that, you know, when you approach things with that perspective, that doors will open, you know, opportunities will present themselves to you.
And one of my favorite sayings, Michael, is, you know, there's a reason they call it the music business. Like, that's literally the most common sense thing to say, but I use that a lot when I talk to people that are in their basements creating like the next crazy wackadoodle music style, and they're angry and they're bitter because nobody will listen, nobody will sign them. And I'm like, hey, if this is your passion and this is what you want to do, be happy with it. But and I have no problem with anybody who wants to create the next Beck or the next like one in a billion thing that will be discovered and commercialized. But if you're trying to commercialize yourself and make money, there's a reason they call it the music biz, and you have to meet the industry somewhere halfway. And I think that saying that I love, that there's a reason they call it the music business, applies to so much of what we do to get yourself knowledge early on, and then later to keep learning and keep developing with the times, you know, where we went from albums to CDs to now we're in Spotify and, you know, YouTube. You got to keep adjusting and you got to keep learning what the new model is.
Right. So I have a question that I always love to ask. And that is, if you could go back and have a conversation with 22-year-old Adam, when he first started working at Criteria to answer phones, and you could impart two nuggets of wisdom on him at 22 years old, what would they be?
Well, here's the first thing. I'll give you some nuggets, but my first saying is going to be, I think about going back in time way more than most people do because my brain doesn't shut down. So one thing that I will always say, which I could end the conversation and I won't be that obnoxious because I have a couple of things, but I could always say, I can't change anything because I have this philosophical belief that if I go back and change things in my life, maybe I wouldn't have had the opportunity to be in the band. If I worked harder, or if I did this, or if I, then maybe that thing wouldn't have happened. So yeah, sure, I would have loved not to have been 30 years old when I got into the band, and I would have loved to have been 20. And then now I would have had like decades to build this new company and this new dream of mine. So the truth is, sure, would have loved to do it earlier, but I can't change all that because then that whole formula of me having that ride might not have happened. But there is something I can offer you, which would be, as far as a technical musician, I probably wish I had I was a horrible student as a kid. I do not condone people slacking on academic work because it builds discipline and responsibility. So please don't drop out of school because I'm telling you I was a horrible student. That's not what I'm saying. But I wish I would have practiced more. I wish I would have had a better vocabulary on the guitar. I always envied my co-guitar player for the skill set that he had. Look, I was great at what I did in the band. I don't even want to say that because that's obnoxious. I was solid. Being in a band is not about shredding, and being a rhythm guitar player isn't about having the best riffs. It's about understanding your position inside of a unit of five people and making sure that everybody is on the same page and everybody's driving the bus together, finding your places for melody, for pockets. So, but technically, I wish that maybe I would have built a bigger vocabulary when I was younger. Honestly, that's the only thing I think that I would have loved to have changed. Other than that, all the screw-ups, all the life lessons, all the slacking and bad decisions I made, it really led to my success. But people at home, please, you can do things a little more clean and have a better chance of success, and maybe a decade earlier than when I did it, because I don't know statistically how many people are going to make it after 30, but there is a chance. I always say, don't get discouraged if you're 35 and you want a vocal career, because anything's possible. We know that.
Wasn't Ed Roland signed when he was like 31 or 32 or 29? He was up there as well.
That is interesting. And as Michael knows, Ed is literally one of the massive factors of why I wound up in Matchbox. And the 10-second story is Ed was recording at Criteria. He's a singer of Collective Soul, for those at home that don't know him. And one of his engineers heard me playing some acoustic outside of one of their studios, told Ed somehow, Ed called the studio to speak to someone. He's like, Adam, by the way, how come you never played me your music? I'm like, whoa, what? I'm like the phone boy. And here's Ed Roland, the singer, Collective Soul, saying, how come you've never played me your stuff? I'm like, because it's not my job and I'm not supposed to do that. He's like, dude, send me your cassette. I'm doing Letterman in New York tomorrow, but send me your cassette. By the way, for the kids at home, cassette, we'll get into that next show, cassettes. And I sent him my cassette, and he sent it to his manager, who sent me a contract, by the way, which we won't get into this story. But then Ed's camp shared it with their producer, who happened to be a guy named Matt Serletic, who happened to be searching for talent and discovered Rob Thomas. And then Matt heard my music and asked me, in the shortest version, if I wanted to meet some guys in Orlando. But there's a very long story to that, which we'll do next time. But that's how that all transpired. It was pretty, pretty crazy.
Yeah, and that just comes back to creating opportunities for yourself and having, you know, having that mindset of, you know, there's always opportunities out there, you know, sticking with the game plan, you know, pushing through, and that, you know, they will lead to opportunities presenting themselves to you. And that's a perfect example of having an opportunity, you know, present itself to you because you really were in that situation creating it for yourself.
Yeah. You have to be, look, you know, you have to be super tenacious. There's no one is going to, you know, you're not going to walk out of your house today and fall into a bag of money. Like, it just doesn't work like that. You have to be super tenacious, and you have to constantly make what I like to call halftime adjustments, because I'm a big sports guy. So you can't keep plowing forward over a decade period and expect, look, statistically it can happen. But if you realize you're pounding something and it's not working, you have to find the right route to get to your place of success. It takes a minute. But again, I always say in every show and everything I do, you know, we all have the basic DNA structure. And if I can be successful, and Michael now is successful with his programs, it's all doable, right? You just have to be smart enough to realize what's working, what's not, make adjustments, sense what's going on around you, if people are responding to what you're working on or not, and then just keep moving forward and relentlessly, man. It's all a grind, but it's all doable. It just takes a lot of work.
Yeah. So, for those who've watched my videos over the years, you may have noticed sometimes, depending on kind of how I'm positioned or where I set up my camera, on the couch behind me, there's a little stuffed animal, like this guy.
There he is.
And so, you know, you just might see this little gray guy sitting back on the couch, but this gray guy is actually pretty significant. This is Edgar. I'm going to have Adam tell you about Edgar. But one of the things I love about Edgar is really what he represents. This was a gift to me from Adam. For those who don't really ever get to see it up close, I even have Adam's little, you know, note he wrote me and a little Adam Gaynor guitar pick, all, you know, part of Edgar here. But I love what Edgar represents, and I'd love for you to talk about Edgar a bit. Adam.
Oh, that's really sweet, man. Yeah, Edgar Pinkleton is kind of the flagship ambassador of Creationville, which is my company, and the podcast that we're also doing. It's kind of a mixture of both. But basically, Edgar represents the idea that you can give and receive unconditional love from something that's not perfect. Like, Edgar obviously has flaws and he doesn't look perfect, but I think when kids and adults hold him, they can kind of be like, oh my God, this thing is really sweet. It's really cute. And it's cool to give unconditional love from something that's not perfect. But what he also represents for the company and in the children's book that we released online is that it's like in the book, it teaches people, it teaches kids a simple concept of, it's really cool to wish upon a star. It's super cool to hope something happens, but it's even cooler to make something happen. And I really want that to resonate with adults and children. Like, the guy who reads the book is like, why can't I open that floral shop that I wanted to my whole life? And for children, it's like, hey, if you want to be a famous baseball player, don't just hope it happens every night. Go out and play 15 minutes every day. So I'm really, really proud of the book, which kind of instills the values of, you got to work a little bit for your dreams. And as kids, you want to have fun, let everybody go, relax, enjoy their lives. But if you can teach your children at the youngest of ages just the smallest amount of discipline to reach a goal, that's going to stay with them for the rest of their lives and hopefully lead to a better chance of success when they get older.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, that's one of the things I just love the story of Edgar and what he represents. He is the only stuffed animal in my studio.
And it should be us elder people should not have too many, although I probably have more than most because that's kind of part of my job is toys and stuff. But yeah, I have probably more than most, including ones that people gave me along the way on the road and stuff. But yeah, Edgar, I am so proud of Edgar. I feel like it is a different entity. Edgar is his own thing, and he makes me very proud to represent him.
And I think this is just such a cool part of your story. And this kind of goes back to what I was talking about earlier about, you know, your about page or your bio that you have, which is just really one of the best ones, because Adam takes you through each stage of Adam's life, you know, and of course, obviously the massive success of the band. But then, you know, since you know, after that ended, how he then continued on entrepreneurial wise and created this whole separate entity with Creationville, with this children's book and with this cast of characters, you know, and that are so positive, you know, and in the storytelling, but like I said, like what Edgar represents.
Thanks, Mike. Yeah, it's fun. And by the way, just to be able to impress you with my about page has inspired me to create the rest of my site, my new site that I'm doing on your Kajabi platform. But yeah, man, when you were excited with what I created, I was like, all right, I'm on to the right pace and the right place. And I was really, really grateful that you encouraged me to keep continuing. I love design. It's what I do in my company outside of the music. I kind of feel like an art director. So I went, I'm going bazonkas on the Kajabi platform, trying to create something that's going to impress you. And then hopefully the rest of the world likes it too.
That's awesome. Well, I'd love for you to also talk about your podcast, because it's a video podcast. Wildly entertaining. You have a bunch of co-hosts. Thanks. and you have a lot of amazing guests who've all, you know, across multiple, you know, genres within the entertainment industry. And I'd love for you to talk about that as well and share it. I'm a huge fan of Adam and what Adam's done in his career. And I've been able to watch a bunch of his podcasts, and they're absolutely fantastic. It's a mini talk show.
Yes. That's the idea. Is I tried to create like a Jimmy Fallon meets Ellen DeGeneres music party. So I have one co-host, his name is Randy Cook, and any of your musician people out in the audience are going to know Randy is one of the most prolific hired drum studio drummers in LA. He's played with everyone from Mick Jagger to did a tour with The Voice. He's played with some of, you know, the biggest names, from Ringo Starr to God knows. I mean, I can name, I make a joke at the beginning of each of the five first episodes of the video podcast. I would go through his credit thing and he'd just be sitting here doing this because it would take up the first 2 minutes of reading. And he'd go, dude, seriously. I'd be like, yeah, Randy keeps like 75 certified RIAA gold records in his trunk just to let people know what he's been doing. But that's my co-host. So I also call him my musical director. So we play like music cues, sound design. So it's not just like a podcast. It's like a literal talk show where we have guests come in each week, whether they're from the Hollywood side or the music business side. The idea is to just have 30 minutes of pure fun. Like, I want you to laugh. I want you to be into it. But then I want to give you a nugget or two nuggets that you can take away. And like, you don't realize you're digesting something of knowledge, but we're trying to just give you a little glimpse of a tool that I might have used, something that maybe this actor used to get discovered. And you'd be very, very excited to realize how it translates to everyone. It doesn't matter what kind of job you're getting. If you hear someone's path to success, and like, this guy put himself in the mailroom, this guy decided to get an acting coach, this guy decided that he needed to practice more, you start to realize the discipline of what it takes to be a Tiger Woods, or to be a Mick Jagger vocalist, or to be a proficient guitar player like Michael Elsner. It takes time, it takes work, and you get to figure out how these people implemented their strategies and where they found their contact points to success. And I honestly, out of all the crazy things I've done in my life, and I've been really super blessed, I'm about as proud of this as I've with anyone, and I'm actually pushing this to be my next full-time career. So it's very exciting.
Yeah, it's a fantastic presentation. Everything, you know, it literally is like you are on a little set, you know, for multi cameras and everything. It is wildly entertaining. Where can everyone go to check it out?
Well, check in with creationville.com first and see where the YouTube channel is going to be living. And then you can go to my @AdamGainer on Instagram for updates on where we're going to be housing it on YouTube. But we shot 12 episodes, and as this airs, we'll be probably going into our first or second month of the shows. And then we're gonna have to figure out what channel it's living on YouTube in between when this is shot and when it's going to air. But just go to creationville.com. It'll all be on there. The episodes will be having links up there as well. So you'll be able to check out the rest of my work.
And they can also get a potential Edgar Pinkleton, right?
Yeah, we're going to have Edgar's book will be on the site, and you'll also be able to sign up for a free chance to win one of five Edgars we're going to be giving away every week just for joining our little Edgar revolution, or if you join the podcast world as well. Edgar's my guy, so I like that he inspires a lot of people, and really not just kids, but I probably have more adults sending me pictures. There's a Edgar Wall of Fame on the site, and you can see it's not just kids, it's adults, and I hope that Edgar inspires everybody to kind of live what their path and their dream is.
Mm-hmm. I have one more question for you, and then we're going to wrap up. In all of your experience with everything you've been through, all the artists that you've known, you know, you talked earlier about you know, how, you know, it is the music business, the business being the key word. What are your perspectives? What would your advice be to anyone listening regarding the entrepreneurial aspect of building a music business?
And it just depends on what regard, right? I think that has a multiple response where, if you're trying to be in a band, you know, you would have to make sure that you have good bandmates, that everybody gets along, that everybody contributes, that, you know, that everybody is playing fair and everybody has the same goals and the same missions. So if that's the musical side success you're trying to do, that's like that probably the hardest thing is to find four friends, four associates that you can get along with for an extended period of time, that have common goals, that want to do the same kind of music. So it's really finding, you know, I think you're better off finding people that you fit with than finding the best singer that is, or the best guitar player that may not be easy to work with. I think it's more important to find a core group of people that you can work with to forge and develop something together. Because if you're having fun at it, chances are you're going to be more successful than being angry and bitter about the people you're working with. If you're trying to work on the production side, if you're trying to be a label mogul, if you're trying to develop yourself as an artist and market yourself, I mean, the things you can do today are learn more about social media marketing, learn why people are getting more plays on Spotify than other people, what are they doing to get their music on editors' playlists. It is so, you know, it's funny that I come from success in the 90s, and again, we made a joke about cassettes into CDs, and then, you know, I took a break from music for about 10 years building Creationville, and I'm just getting back my feet wet and starting to work with other artists and producing a little bit as I gear up with the podcast and then and the possible reentry into music. It's funny how so much has changed, of course, but how much you can still learn. So it's really, I think right now for anybody, learning how to promote and market yourself online are tools we didn't have when we were in a band starting out. There was no literal internet pretty much. So you have a lot of strategical advantages. Don't look at it as competition, that there's a million people out there. I have a saying I use on the show every night to end it. You put your horsey blinders on. That means you have your own vision, your own focus looking forward. Don't listen to any noise outside, naysayers, people giving you bad, distracting advice. Stay focused on what your goal is. Learn how to put yourself out there, how to make adjustments, seeing what people are responding to, what starts to slowly build versus if there's a plateau, you got to adjust so you keep growing your audience. And that's kind of the best overall advice I can have. You have a lot of great tools out there. Don't worry about what everybody else is doing. When I was making records, I didn't worry about what the Goo Goo Dolls were doing on their next record. I was worried about what Matchbox 20 is writing and producing in the studio for ourselves.
That's awesome. Well, I always love to end with our manifesto, and that is real musicians are business owners, and our business is music. Now, business is simply an organization where value is provided in order to make a profit. And unlike starving musicians who operate with a mindset of scarcity and fear, as success-driven musicians, we operate with a mindset of abundance, confidence, and service. We are doers, we are dreamers, we are creators, and we are achievers. We know that our true value is determined by how many people we serve and how well we serve them, because our truth is real musicians don't starve.
I love that, Michael. That's awesome. Bravo, brother. That's really cool. Very cool.
Awesome. Well, Adam, thanks so much for joining us, and we will see everyone on the next episode.